the beauty for her, for her father, who was Imam Ali alayhi salatu wassalam.
That's right. Okay, what information, Sheikh Fadai, do we have about her scholarly life? Was she, again, a ravi of hadith, or a muhaddis, a mufassir, or something like that, or not?
Of course, she was one of the narrators of hadith from her father, her brothers. But the more important point is that she was a mu'allama. It means that it was needed to narrate from her. If we want to look at the scholarly position of Lady Zainab, we can see that one of the titles of Lady Zainab is Aqileh. Aqileh means someone who is in the higher level of intellect and wisdom.
It means a wise woman.
Wise woman. Means, yes. And they didn't go to any school in order to learn something from other people.
Yes.
So their knowledge, as we call it, the knowledge of laduni in our Islamic studies, laduni means from God.
Ilman laduni.
Their knowledge came from God. So, for example, when they, after the event of Ashura, when she had some lectures in Kufa, in the castle of Yazid in Sham, people described her lectures like when we were listening to her lecture, we imagine that her father, Amir al-Mu'minin, is talking. So imagine that she was not an ordinary person.
Yes.
When she talked completely and deeply, scholarly.
Yes.
And she reminded people of her father. So we know the position of her father, Amir al-Mu'minin, in the science and knowledge.
Yes.
So when she reminded people of her father, you can imagine what kind of position she has. But, you know, about her lecture, the important point is the position and the importance of clarification, or as our leaders say, Jihad al-Tabhin.
Yes.
It means the battle of clarification. So if Lady Zainab didn't clarify the reality for people after the event of Ashura by her knowledge.
Yes.
As I told you, like Amir al-Mu'mineen, her lecture. If she didn't do that, people would believe that Yazid was on the right side and Imam Hussein was on the wrong side.
Yes.
You know, she changed everything. You know, first of all, people...
But because the enemy didn't think that a lady, a woman, might be of such a power of lecturing, you know. So much eloquence, so much, you know, she was really outstanding in
you know, if they knew that, they would kill her in the Battle of Ashura for sure. They didn't know. They thought that if we kill Imam Hussein and his army, everything will be done. So we will be the winner. But Lady Zainab, by her knowledge and by her power in lecturing, changed everything. So people could understand the reality that the right way is something that they didn't know. And we see in the history record that after she started her lecture in the castle of Yazid, people, the crowd started to cry.
Yes.
So what kind of people? The people who were celebrating the martyrdom of Imam Hussein as Khawarij, means some people who exited the way of religion. People call them Khawarij, na'udhu billah.
Yes.
But after her lecture, the crowd started to cry. So what is the meaning of that cry? It means that they were changed. They understood and realized the reality. And that is just by the position of Lady Zainab. No one could do that. As we say, we have a famous poem in Persian, Karbala dar Karbala mimand agar Zainab na. It means the event of Karbala would die in the land of Karbala if it was not for Lady Zainab.
Yes. That's all right.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
La ilaha illallah. Her presence after the story of Karbala is outstanding, you know, when you refer to most of the authentic documents of Islam and the references, you can find the role of Lady Zainab Salamullah Alayha in disclosing the most outstanding truths of history. Up to now, if the Shiite communities and the gatherings and majalis are held for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, this is because of the bravery of Lady Zainab Salamullah Alayha. Okay, Sheikh Rouhani, what other information can you give us about the scholarly life of this outstanding Lady Zainab Salamullah Alayha?
Yes, as you know, after the event of Ashura, so the Amawid caliphs and Salatin and kings, they were of the view that, okay, the story of Imam Hussein had finished and nothing left from the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam, because we killed and murdered Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam and imprisoned his children and captured all the children of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, and there's nothing left for Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. Everything finished.
Yes.
But you see that later we see that the people revolt against Amawids, and Amawids toppled down by the people of Khorasan. Yes. Now, very significant question is here that how did it happen?
Mm-hmm.
While the story of Tashayyu and Ahlul Bayt should have been finished, you know, nothing left. But the reality and the history is totally different.
Mm-hmm.
From Kufa, Tawabin resisted and revolted against. From Khorasan, Abu Muslim and the people of Khorasan revolted and resisted against Amawids.
Yes.
To the extent that they finished the story of Amawids. In reality, the story of Amawids finished by the event of Ashura. How? Here, the role of Lady Zainab, Salamullahi Alayha, is very, very much significant.
Mm-hmm.
Because her khutbah in the castle of Ibn Ziyad,
yes,
in Kufa was such strong, was such influential on the people that everything changed completely, the view of the people. When Lady Zainab, Salamullahi Alayha, started talking to the people understood that the reality behind the story of Karbala is totally different. That's why you see that it is said in the history that the speech or the lecture presented by Zainab was that much influential to the people that Ibn Ziyad wanted to kill Zainab.
Oh.
Yeah, yes. He decided to kill Zainab.
Okay.
Then the advisors of Ibn Ziyad told him that, are you want to kill a lady?
Mm-hmm.
Shame on you.
Yes.
Then she stopped killing Lady Zainab, Salamullah Alayha. And the other lecture that was presented by Lady Zainab was in the castle in the court of Yazid.
Yes.
There also, Lady Zainab spoke to the people in a way that finally, the mindset of the people totally changed.
Yes.
And even Yazid himself changed his mindset. Because at the beginning, he said that, look, what did Allah do with your brother, Imam Hussein, and what happened to Ashura was the truth of the history. Look, but then Lady Zainab, Salamullah Alayha, when she started talking to the people, she presented a speech there.
Yes.
Finally, you see that after this speech made by Lady Zainab, Salamullah Alayha, Yazid himself cursed Ibn Ziyad.
Oh.
Cursed Umar Asad, cursed Shimr.
Mm.
Look, this was the change that made, yes, by Lady Zainab in the court of Yazid, in the presence of ministers, official, let's say, people, and I mean ambassadors of different, let's say, nations. So it was a very formal kind of gathering. But in that gathering, Zainab Salamullah Alayha did actually presented such a speech that had that much influence on not only on the people, mm-hmm, but also on the Yazid himself. So that's
right.
Why Yazid later, he respected Imam Zain al-Abidin. He respected Zainab Salamullah Alayha.
Yes.
And of course, it was because of the role of Zainab. Then we see after these events, we see that the people of Kufa, the people of Medina, people of Mecca, lots of qiyam or resistance started against Amawids. And finally, it led to the, let's say, the toppling down of what is that called, Amawids in the history.
That's right. Okay, thank you very much. The name Zainab is among the most, we can say, famous names, which is selected for the girls in all across the world, not only in Iran, Iraq, for example, or the Muslim lands, even in Europe, in Africa, they select the name Zainab for their daughters and for their girls over there. Any other information missed about her life, about her demise? Because it is usually believed that her tomb is in Syria. There is one also which is believed to be in Egypt, but the Syria one is the most famous one, isn't it?
About the reason, it is told that the kingdom of that time exiled her, exiled Lady Zainab, to Syria, Sham at that time.
Yes.
Because of that power of lecturing, because of her knowledge. You know, she didn't stop clarifying the event of Karbala after the Kufa and Sham. She continued that even in Medina when they got back to Medina, and it was a danger for the kingdom. They exalt her again to Sham, which was under the control of Muawiyah and his army and the next caliphs. And she died there, and the authentic record is that her shrine is there. But I want to mention another point about Lady Zainab, which is her patience. You know, we may listen, we may hear a lot about her patience, but I want to say that it's better to learn that, not just listen, not just hear that. You know, Lady Zainab, although she loved her brother, I don't know, her niece, her nephew, even her children, she lost more than 20 dear relatives and members of family just in half of day. But she never complained about that. And she never stopped defending the way of God. But what about us?
Yes.
Are we like that? Sometimes when we feel the pressure of life, mostly economic pressure, we stop in the way of God.
Yes.
We don't continue walking like that. Mm-hmm. But this is not the way of Lady Zainab. As we can see these days in Palestine, they lose their dear members of family, but they never stop. They never complain about that. This is the real following of Ahlul Bayt. If we call ourselves Shia, we should learn that patience, that tolerance, among the hardship of life.
That's all right. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Fadai and Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration on the scholarly life and the religious life of Lady Zainab al-Kubra, salamullah alayha. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. For more information, visit our website at parstudy.ir, Call of Islam, PhD. Another episode. God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
A diverse range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson: avoiding hidden shirk. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Today's weather is so bad. Hang on, what did you just say? Today's weather is so bad. Watch out. This may amount to a form of hidden shirk. What? Where is shirk in this statement? Well, if you examine the statement carefully, you'd realize that this comment alludes to be an objection on the will of Allah. Allah is the one who decided today's weather to be like this. We have to be very careful and vigilant. It may be easy for most of us to protect ourselves against open shirk, but it is at times very difficult to protect against the hidden shirk. How can we avoid committing hidden shirk is something we will talk in the second half of the segment. But before we go there, I would like to think about this example once more. You know, how many times in our lifetime do we say things like, this weather is so bad. I hate this weather. I don't like this weather. Just one example, huh? This amounts to a form of shirk. We are objecting on the divine decision of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to have this weather in today's date or today's date in such a way. We're objecting on Allah. How many a times we have, you know, complained against Allah that why in the world this evil thing happened to me? Why me? Again, it is a form of hidden shirk, polytheism. These are minor things on the surface level, but once you dig deeper into it, they are serious issues. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing the hidden shirk, polytheism, which is shirk through showing off. One of the ways in which we become polytheists is when we do things for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, but then we start showing off to others. Today's weather is so bad, we gave that example before the break. It is a form of hidden shirk. Okay? Now, we raised a question before the break, and that is, how can we avoid committing hidden shirk? Well, the answer to that is that it requires a higher level of vigilance and watchfulness to avoid committing hidden shirk. The higher we go in our spirituality, the more difficult it becomes to maintain our faith. And hence, a high level of constant surveillance is required to protect us from falling in this trap of shaitan. Attentiveness is the only solution to protect us from committing hidden shirk. We have to be cautious. It's that simple as that. Everything we say, every gesture that we make, every, you know, message that we type, we have to be careful and cautious. We need to be mindful of this fact that, you know, we don't end up committing or saying something or writing something that amounts to being hidden shirk. We need to practice a certain level of self-awareness. A believer can't just walk around saying, look at his nose, it is so ugly. Be careful. You may just have committed a hidden shirk because Allah is the one who created this person's nose like this. So watch out, brothers and sisters. Do not commit hidden shirk.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
in the limelight.
The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, has expressed concerns about the catastrophic situation of Palestinian children in the besieged Gaza Strip, which has been under a genocidal Israeli regime bombing campaign for over 3 weeks. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Press TV, UNICEF spokesperson Toby Fricker said the number of children killed in Gaza is catastrophic. He said in an interview with Al Jazeera TV channel recently, "The situation for children is horrific." He also called for the protection of Gaza hospitals from relentless Israeli regime airstrikes, the establishment of safe humanitarian corridors, and the continuous and sustainable delivery of humanitarian aid to the people in the coastal enclave. In another interview with France 24, Fricker said the scale of the humanitarian crisis in Gaza is staggering. The Gaza children, he noted, are petrified about the situation that they are living through in the densely populated territory. The Zionist regime waged a bloody war on the Gaza Strip on October 7 after the Palestinian Hamas resistance movement launched the surprise Operation Al-Aqsa Storm against the occupying entity. Since the start of the war, the Tel Aviv regime has been committing war crimes in Gaza, killing at least 8,069 Palestinians, mostly women and children, and injuring over 22,000 others. It has also imposed a complete siege on the territory, cutting off fuel, electricity, food and water to the more than 2 million Palestinians living in the coastal sliver. Press TV continued, recently the International Criminal Court's top prosecutor urged the Zionist regime to make discernible efforts to make sure civilians get basic food and medicines. Speaking at a news conference in Egypt, Karim Khan said impending aid to Gaza could be a crime under ICC jurisdiction. He emphasized there should not be any impediment to humanitarian relief supplies going to children, to women and men, civilians. Khan said there are innocents. They have rights under international humanitarian law, warning that curtailing those rights give rise to criminal responsibility under the ICC's Rome Statute. According to Al Jazeera English, more children have now been killed in Gaza in the last 3 weeks than the total killed in conflicts around the world in every year since 2019, the non-governmental organization Save the Children has said. Figures released by the NGO recently referencing Palestinian health authorities show that at least 3,324 children have been killed in Gaza since October 7, while 36 have died in the West Bank. According to reports from the UN Secretary General on Children and Armed Conflict, a total of 2,985 children were killed across 24 countries in 2022, 2,000 515 in 2021 and 2,674 in 2020 across 22 countries. Save the Children said, "One child's death is one in too many, but these are grave violations of epic proportions," said Jason Lee, Save the Children's country director for the occupied Palestinian territory. "A ceasefire is the only way to ensure their safety. The international community must put people before politics. Every day spent debating is leaving children killed and injured. Children must be protected at all times, especially when they are seeking safety in schools and hospitals." Al Jazeera English added, "The statement comes as the Zionist regime pushes forward with expanded ground operations inside Gaza as heavy aerial bombardment continues. Recently, the entire Gaza Strip experienced a near-total communication blackout in what emerging accounts have described as a night of sheer terror and some of the heaviest fighting since the war began. A further 1,000 children have been reported missing in Gaza and maybe under the rubble. Children make up more than 40% of the more than 8,000 people confirmed to have been killed in Gaza. More than 6,000 children have been injured in Gaza since the war began. Overall, at least 1,400 Israelis and foreign nationals have also been killed, mostly in the surprise attack by Hamas resistance movement on October 7th. The Zionist regime has imposed a total siege on the Gaza Strip, tightening the blockade enforced since 2007, cutting all supplies of food, electricity, fuel, and water, and only allowing small amounts of aid through the Rafah crossing with Egypt since October 21st.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Genocide.
Our people in the Gaza Strip are facing a war of genocide and massacres committed by the Israeli occupation forces in full view of the entire world.
I say frankly to the American statesmen who are now managing the genocide in Palestine,
I am raising alarm about the possibly catastrophic consequences of large-scale ground operations in Gaza and the potential for thousands more civilians to die.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Worldwide, people are condemning Israel and the inability to stop this war.
We're calling for a ceasefire. You know, I want a ceasefire.
We are here to declare our solidarity with Palestine and the Palestinian people.
The streets have spoken. Some ask, what will protest do for Palestinians? For starters, it has changed the mind of many politicians on Israel. Take the UK, which has held large pro-Palestine protests for 3 weeks in a row. The string of resignations have rocked the UK's Labour Party. It came after party leader Keir Starmer said Israel had the right to cut power and water supplies to Palestinians living in Gaza.
And Israel has every right to defend herself.
In the US, pro-Palestinian events have been held across the country. Many Democrats have come out in support of Palestinians over Israel, questioning the U.S. military assistance.
Israel has dropped more bombs in the last 10 days than we dropped in a whole year in Afghanistan.
Let's not forget the Leahy Law, a U.S. human rights law that prohibits the U.S. from providing equipment and training to a foreign entity suspected of committing gross human rights violations. Even some UN members are changing their tune, like at the UN. Condemnations against Israel have come from many European officials. From officials in Spain to EU's Josep Borrell to Scotland's First Minister Hamza Youssef, who condemned Israel's collective punishment. But the South African foreign minister's remarks topped the list.
Why countries like South Africa have been consistent in their support for Palestine and have never deviated from the belief President Mandela held that until the people of Palestine are free, South Africa will not be fully free.
Israel has finally conducted its ground incursions into the Gaza Strip. Apparently, it wants to execute block-by-block warfare. The goal? To destroy Hamas. The human costs will be high. Even Israel has admitted that. The battle will be an extensive one, but there will be a price for that, and we will have a price to pay. But we will go on until we complete this operation to the fullest. This so-called new phase is the second phase out of the three phases that the Israeli Minister of Military Affairs announced a few weeks ago. The first phase, a military bombing campaign. The second, a ground maneuver. And the third, the creation of a new security regime in the Gaza Strip, removing Israel from the responsibility of day-to-day life in the Strip. This third phase raises a lot of questions as to what Gallant meant by a new security regime and the removal of Israel's responsibility for day-to-day life in the Gaza Strip. On the ground operation, Frank McKenzie, retired U.S. Marine four-star general, has said Hamas fighters will seek to draw Israeli forces into a city street fight. He said they will use their tunnel network to get in behind the attack or to attack in all directions to make it very difficult for Israel to effectively employ a technological advantage. Here's a glimpse of the tunnels. They are rather extensive. A complex web, multifunction in scope, and hidden. On Hamas capabilities, this is how Israel was welcomed by Hamas resistance fighters when they entered the Gaza Strip. The shooting of an Israeli armored vehicle with a Kornet ATGM missile in the east of Gaza. Officials and experts are wary that Israel, supposedly having one of the most advanced militaries in the world, with a stockpile of American precision-guided munitions, will get drawn into an urban brawl which it may not handle.
Hamas have a much, much stronger hand, given that they've been building these tunnels over 16 years.
Yeah.
They have been ruling ruling Gaza, and it's a town. They have a town underground that they are in control of, not the Israeli army.
Which brings us to this question. Does Israel even have an end game?
They don't have an end game. They don't have an answer to the crucial question, what will be the day after?
The U.S. does have an end game. Uproot Palestinians, commit another Nakba, send Palestinians to other countries like Egypt, to the Sinai Desert there. Egypt's reward, U.S. debt to be written off. Meanwhile, Palestinians have another image on their mind.
So
Since October the 7th, Israel has launched a relentless bombing campaign against the people of Gaza. The bombardments have claimed the lives of thousands of innocent Palestinians, most of them women and children. Israel's genocidal war on the people of Palestine has sparked mass rallies across the world. Journalists, activists, and even athletes have joined the growing calls to put an end to the carnage. But most of these voices are being suppressed due to the pressure by Israel and Zionist lobbies. Reports have been circulating at an alarming pace about activists being sacked from their positions, journalists being relieved of their duties, and even athletes being stripped of their contracts. The editor-in-chief of an academic journal said that he was fired from his job after sharing an article about people dying in Gaza. Michael Eisen, a geneticist at the University of California, Berkeley, and the editor of the scientific journal eLife, tweeted to say that he had been informed that he is being replaced as the publication's editor. Egyptian TikToker Karim Kabani said he had been sacked from his job in France because he made three videos on TikTok in support of the people of Palestine. Jackson Frank, who was recently appointed as the Sixers beat writer for Philly Voice, was relieved of his duties after sending out a tweet in solidarity with the people of Palestine. Frank, a vocal supporter of Palestine, in one of his tweets, days after his unceremonious sacking, termed the Israeli atrocities against the people in Gaza as, quote, genocide. In the Canadian city of Ontario, the New Democratic Party, NDP, expelled MPP Sarah Jama from the caucus earlier this week for her statements in support of Palestinians.
Governments and institutions in Canada are trying to use their voice to wait to silence us, to silence workers, students, educators, and peace-loving people who dare to support Palestine. And to every person who's taking a risk to speak up for Palestinian dignity and safety, I see you and I hear you and I am with you. They try hard to silence us, but we know that our words are powerful, and we must continue to speak up, no matter the cost.
In a series of tweets, Sarah Jama called for an immediate ceasefire and de-escalation. Maha Dakhil, one of the top agents in Hollywood, also had to call it quits from her role at the Creative Artists Agency, CAA, after she posted in support of Palestine. And Tanya Singh, a unionist from Minneapolis, said she had been terminated from her job in a union for anti-Semitism over her support for Palestine.
Governments across the world, in an attempt to address anti-Semitism and somehow redress the horrors of the Holocaust, are allowing Israel to get away with apartheid, ethnic cleansing, detention of children, torture, restriction of movement and other freedoms, and the illegal occupation of land. After every genocide, the world cries out, never again. And yet here you see another attempted genocide unfold right in front of your eyes, and you don't just watch on quietly, but actively supporting the oppressor.
Meanwhile, the crisis in Gaza has unveiled Western double standards regarding the issue of Palestinians and their cause. Western nations have tried their best to silence pro-Palestine voices. Germany, for example, has in recent weeks moved hysterically to ban pro-Palestine demonstrations altogether, smearing them as quote-unquote anti-Semitic gatherings. Berlin has violently cracked down on Palestinian activists. French Interior Minister Gerald Darmanin has declared an outright ban on all Palestine-related protests. In addition, those standing in solidarity with the Palestinian cause are also reportedly being stopped, questioned and fined. In the UK, the Rishi Sunak government has come out openly in support of the Israeli regime's genocidal campaign in the besieged Gaza Strip. Home Secretary Suella Braverman insisted that waving the Palestinian flag could amount to inciting racism or violence. At the same time, Prime Minister Sunak demanded all state buildings should display the Israeli flag. The response by the European officials to the massacre in the Gaza Strip and the subsequent intensifications of the siege and the indiscriminate bombing of civilians by Tel Aviv has laid bare the hypocrisy of the European leaders and their blatant bias towards Israel.
We know for sure that we represent the views of the majority of people in Ireland. We represent the views of our Parliament, and we genuinely believe that we represent the views of the majority of European citizens who have taken to the streets in their tens and hundreds of thousands over the past number of days, appalled by the stance of the EU so-called leaders who have been complicit in genocide and ethnic cleansing by allowing Israel to behave as it does.
Just days ago, more than 800 EU officials wrote a letter to the bloc's chief, Ursula von der Leyen, criticizing her uncontrolled support of Israel. The signatories of the letter said there is a seeming indifference demonstrated over the past few days by our institution towards the ongoing massacre of civilians in the Gaza Strip in disregard for human rights and international humanitarian law. The letter represents deep division within the bloc on how to approach the Israel-Gaza war.
The war in Gaza is in its third week, and Israel has been hinting at a ground operation for several days. Israeli forces, backed by heavy deployment of U.S. warships in the region, have taken positions close to the besieged Strip's frontiers, while at the same time warplanes continue to indiscriminately pound Gaza. The regime, however, keeps delaying the ground invasion, citing the need to enhance the readiness of its forces and the issue of the captives. However, informed sources have told Press TV that Israeli forces have actually tried a ground offensive, and that twice. The first try happened on Sunday afternoon, as an Israeli brigade was ambushed by Palestinian resistance forces when trying to enter Gaza's Rafah border. Two bulldozers and a tank belonging to the regime were hit, and some 10 tanks were left as the Israeli soldiers fled for their lives. The second failed ground invasion, Press TV source said, happened hours later on Sunday night. This time, more than 20 Israeli tanks were repelled on the way to Khan Yunis. The regime's military later reported that one soldier was killed and three were injured by an anti-tank missile shot by Hamas during a raid into the Gaza Strip. The Qassam Brigades, the armed wing of Hamas, announced later on its Telegram account that it had pushed Israeli forces back into the occupied territories. The next day, Tel Aviv announced that it had decided to delay the ground war in Gaza, pending the arrival of additional American forces in the region. Meanwhile, Hamas and other Palestinian resistance factions have expressed full readiness for any battle on the ground, warning that Gaza will turn into a graveyard for invaders in the event of a ground offensive.
I think this is part of their plan. We are expecting this to happen. But what we hear from the people, from the military wing, that we believe that if they try to enter Gaza again, it will be the, what we call it, the Maqbara, they will be not only defeated, but they will be buried here in Gaza Strip.
Following the October 7 surprise operation by Hamas, the delusion of Israel's invincible military and intelligence power was shattered. The Al-Aqsa flood operation demonstrated that Hamas and other resistance groups are totally capable of performing offensive operations. On the other hand, resistance movements across the region have warned that in the event of U.S. intervention, all American outposts in West Asia will turn into legitimate targets. The question remains whether Washington is ready to take this dangerous risk or not.
Thank you.
Rebbe English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Rebbe English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Rebbe English Radio.
In the limelight.
The former U.S. Vice President Mike Pence has dropped out of the 2024 presidential race. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Former Vice President Mike Pence ended his campaign to become the 2024 Republican nominee to a standing ovation on Saturday, 28th of October, at the Republican Jewish Coalition in Las Vegas, Nevada. "We always knew this would be an uphill battle, but I have no regrets," Mike Pence said. "To the American people, I say this is not my time, but it's still your time. I urge you to hold fast to what matters most: faith, family, and the Constitution of the United States." Mike Pence had struggled to gain traction in the race since entering the presidential fray, lagging in fundraising and languishing in the opinion polls. Pence is the most high-profile candidate to drop out of the race so far, proving how hard it is for any of the Republicans to break publicly with former President Donald Trump amid a crowded field. His announcement comes shortly before the third presidential debate on 8th of November in Miami, Florida, for which he had yet to qualify. Speaking in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mike Pence said, "I came here to say it's become clear to me this was not my time. So after much prayer and deliberation, I have decided to suspend my campaign for president, effective from today." Pence vowed even though he was ending his campaign, he would persist in championing the cause of electing Republican leaders to every level of government. He did not say if he would endorse any other of the Republican presidential candidates, attempting to contrast himself from his former boss, Donald Trump, without alienating the large swathe of Trump voters, proved to be an uphill battle for Mike Pence. His campaign struggled to create high levels of enthusiasm for his candidacy, and his fundraising reflected the disinterest. The candidate's latest FEC filing in mid-October disclosed substantial debt and minimal individual donations. Since Mike Pence announced he would be running for president, Donald Trump was indicted in two separate jurisdictions, one federal and one in Fulton County, Georgia, for his alleged attempt to overturn the 2020 election results, throwing Mike Pence's break with Trump in the public spotlight and forcing him to be more vocal in his opposition to his former boss. On the campaign trail, Mike Pence had to frequently defend his decision to oppose Donald Trump and his alleged attempts to overturn the 2020 election. Pence repeatedly said he fulfilled his constitutional responsibilities during the joint session of Congress on 6th of January 2021, amid the attack on the U.S. Capitol, a claim that many Republicans disagreed with. Between June and September, he managed to raise $3.3 million, but his available cash on hand was limited to just $1.2 million, leaving him grappling with a significant debt of approximately $620,000. His personal contribution of $150,000 to his campaign underscored the financial deficit that his campaign had been facing. Mike Pence concentrated his efforts on fundraising to secure a spot in the upcoming Republican debate in Miami, Florida, on 8th of November. The Pence campaign had not verified whether the candidate had garnered the 70,000 individual donations or fulfilled the polling requirements needed for participation. So far, only four campaigns have said they qualified and are attending the debate. Former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy, and former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. As a deadline for filing for the South Carolina primary loomed just 3 days away, the candidate's campaign had evaded inquiries from reporters about the filing process, which required a $50,000 fee. Mike Pence had split up with Donald Trump just after the 2020 election when he refused to overturn the election results in the joint session of Congress on 6th of January 2021. And that impacted his campaign. Pence's role in the lead-up to the 6th of January 2021 had been well documented, including by the House Select Committee that had been investigating the attack on the U.S. Capitol. Amid the attack on the Capitol on that day, rioters could be heard chanting, "Hang Mike Pence," and Pence was moved to a secure location. American newspaper The Daily Beast has also covered this story and tells us more. Former Vice President Mike Pence said on Saturday, 28th of October, that he would end his bid for the White House, marking the end of a campaign that had struggled to raise funds or gain major traction in the race dominated by his former boss, Donald Trump. Pence's announcement arrived with little warning towards the end of the remarks given at the Republican Jewish Coalition in Las Vegas, Nevada, prompting gasps from the audience. "I came here to say it's become clear to me that it's not my time. So after much prayer and deliberation, I have decided to suspend my campaign for president effective from today. I'm leaving this campaign, but let me promise you, I will never leave the fight for conservative values, and I will never stop fighting to elect principled Republican leaders to every office in the land." Mike Pence's stunning exit arrived exactly 2 weeks after he filed to appear on New Hampshire's primary ballot, where his moment in the spotlight was interrupted by a heckler. Pence, while exiting in the upper echelon of GOP hopefuls, failed to make even a dent in the gulf that separated him and his former boss, Donald Trump, who has dominated the GOP primary thus far. Mike Pence had also yet to qualify for the third and final GOP presidential debate after appearing in the first two televised debates, his second debate showing plagued by questionable jokes, including one about his wife, Karen Pence.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in a meeting with President Raisi and his cabinet on August 30, 2023, on the occasion of Government Week. Some good things have taken place that have not been conveyed to people in the way it deserves to be. I would like to mention a few of these things so that the facts and realities of the administration will be clearer to the general public and to those who do not have a certain opinion or prejudice. I will speak about them in several sections. In the economic sector, good things have been done by the administration, the details of which were explained to some extent by both the president and the vice president. What I would like to emphasize is that a significant number of macroeconomic indicators signal growth, progress, and positive changes. Of course, it will take some time before the effects of these macroeconomic issues will be seen in people's lives and livelihood. Some administrations tend to sacrifice the future for the present, but this is not what this administration has done. It has done great fundamental work, the effects of which will be seen later, even though they may not be fully apparent today. I will mention a few of the things, but there are also many other things in the report that I have been given. The reports show that there are close to 50 positive things that have taken place in the field of economy. I will share a few of these things with you.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Increased economic growth, especially in the industrial sector, is important. There has been increased growth in investments, which is one of our most important economic issues. Our main problem in some previous periods was the issue of investments which had a negative growth. It is called negative growth in common terminology when actually it is not growth, rather it is regression. There has been a reduction in the excessive growth of money supply, which was already mentioned. There has been a reduction in unemployment, a reduction in the Gini coefficient, a significant growth in the export of goods, and a strengthening of tax system. The government's tax revenues have been able to provide a significant part of the government's current budget. There has also been a significant growth in the production of petrochemical products. The issue of petrochemical products is one of the important issues in the country. Valuable measures have been taken in the fields of oil and gas, one of which was Phase 11 of the South Pars gas field, which was recently inaugurated by the president. Another important activity is the reopening of the closed, partially closed workshops.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Thousands gathered in the Pakistani capital Islamabad for a massive rally in support of Palestine. All Islamic communities, including Shia and Sunni, came together to voice their strong condemnation of Israel's atrocities in Gaza. Pakistan's religio-political party Jamaat-e-Islami hosted Gaza Million Mile.